The Fan on Demand.
Welcome to Primetime Sports. Welcome back to Primetime Sports for July 21st. You scared me for a minute.
I think I just got the Friendly Giant mixed up with Casey and Finnegan for Mr. Dress Up for a second. I know the Friendly Giant. I grew up on that dude. And I'm told in real life he was only 5'4". A lot of studio trickery.
The Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCown, Ken Reed of Sportsnet. There was a reference to look up way up, and I dropped a Friendly Giant thing, and Mr. Reed looked at me like, huh? I thought, there is no Canadian child. Surely there's no Canadian child that has never heard of Mr. Dressa.
Oh,
the Friendly Giant.
You got them mixed up as well, because they were on a 10 and 10:30, see? But I remembered them.
Remember Shea Helene?
No.
Ha!
Romper Room?
Romper Room, I remember.
Yeah. Who's Shea Helene?
Shea Helene was this matronly French-Canadian woman who would teach you, teach you French.
I remember KLF. You remember KLF?
The band?
Yeah.
No. I just guessed. Anyhow. So there's
a good guess.
Take a look online. Shea Helene.
Mm-hmm. Was she on The Friendly Giant?
No. She had her own show. She had her own shtick.
Okay.
I am 54 years old. Remember that. So I've seen a lot of things you haven't seen, Sonny Boy.
Saying I'm a little younger than you, and according to Doug McLean's wife, Jill, I'm very, very young, which is nice.
Yeah. It is nice when people think you're young.
Yeah, it is.
The Jays and the Boston Red Sox start a four-game series tonight at the Rogers Center. The Jays, winners of 2 of 3 against the Texas Rangers. And don't look now, but over the weekend, the Boston Red Sox and Tampa Bay Rays have quietly crept back into the American League East race. Both of them are 7.5 games out. The Jays, 3 back, but it is getting tight in the American League East. Joe Siddle of our Blue Jays broadcast crew joins us from the Rogers Center. Hello, Mr. Siddle.
Gentlemen, hello. No, long time no see, Jeff.
Yeah, what? It's been
at least a few hours.
Yeah, 6 hours. It was so good I wanted to do it again.
Sounds good.
So,
I'm in.
Sergio Santos is DFA'd for doing SFA. You like the way I did that? DFA for
it? I'm not going to ask for interpretation either.
All right, but anyhow, he was DFA'd. And Alex Anthopoulos making pretty clear that he thinks he'll go through waivers and that he'll go down to Buffalo and hopefully get whatever ails him working out. Although I've got to think, Joe, that what Alex really wants is somebody to take him on waivers. That's probably not going to happen. What is your take on Sergio Santos? And is it time to turn the page on this guy? He's got a great arm. You know, he appears to be a decent guy. It just, for whatever reason, he has had difficulty staying healthy, and he's had difficulty when he is healthy commanding his fastball.
Well, and that's not a very good combination when you get an opportunity, and it started at the very beginning of the year when Casey started on the disabled list, and the ball was handed to Sergio, and he was okay at times, but then, of course, we all remember that night in Minnesota, and he was not the only one, of course, but you know, he was given an opportunity, and he had his struggles. It didn't work out real well for him. Then he had his injury, and then when he came back from there, he's just been used sparingly. But, you know, I always say, too, I know as a catcher, when you don't see a relief pitcher coming in too often, usually there's a reason, and it's probably because you've made your bed and you just haven't pitched that well. So you don't expect a manager to go to a guy if he does not have the hot hand. And when the starters are pitching pretty decently, like the Blue Jay starters had been through that stretch, you're not going to the pen as early and you're counting on your late guys more. So he just kind of got lost in that shuffle. But as I said, sometimes you make your bed and it's just a frustrating bed that you're sleeping in.
Joe, what's changed about the Blue Jays bullpen this year as opposed to last year when it was basically just a machine?
Well, what I understand, it was pretty slam dunk last year. Guys were very good down there, and what we're seeing to this season is it's just very inconsistent. It's pretty simple. I mean, you get guys coming in that at times are doing the job, but even the guys that you count on, even the Loops and the Cecils come in and they'll walk a guy. And I talked to Aaron Loop about that the other day, and he doesn't have an explanation for it, because I'd like to know it. As a catcher, a lot of times you see something in a pitcher's delivery, or you pick up something based on what the ball is doing and where he's missing on the plate. And a lot of times as a catcher, I can feel like, you know, you can be a pitching coach back there and help him by setting up a little bit more in on that righty if it means him getting it glove side better. But it's just been that kind of inconsistency. It's a real feel for him, and he's one example because I just spoke to him yesterday about this. That's why I'm talking about him. It's just a feel thing, and sometimes sometimes you may have it in the bullpen and you get out on the mound, but as we know, things change. The bullpen is far different than the game when you're coming in, especially if it's a crucial situation. So I think, and not to pick on Aaron Loop, as I said, I just spoke to him a little bit about it. I think Cecil's in the same group, and I think, you know, Todd Redmond over the most of the part, he's been doing a very good job. Dustin McGowan has done a very good job. He's had a few hiccups as well, but generally speaking, I think guys coming out of the bullpen last year sounded like it was a pretty special year where they were just locked in almost every time out, and it just hasn't been the case. It's a difficult job down there, and you're facing a team tonight in the Red Sox that has done a very good job, but it's a real feel thing, and you have to be able to have that feel coming out of the bullpen. If you don't, it's not good.
Joe Siddall joins us on Primetime Sports. Joe, I've got to think that calling up Rob Rasmussen to replace Sergio Santos, John Gibbons, Alex Anthopoulos, they've got that at bat in their mind. May 21st, Fenway Park, Rob Rasmussen retired. David Ortiz, a great vote of confidence from John Gibbons. This is a pretty good. As I look at the Jays' bullpen right now with Brett Cecil, and we saw Aaron Loop close yesterday, you really need to maximize your left-handed efficiency against this lineup, don't you? Because at some point, I mean, the one guy in this lineup, Red Sox lineup, that can hurt you is David Ortiz. And I would not at all be surprised if game on the line tonight, John Gibbons doesn't go to Rob Rasmussen.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it, but I mean, it seems quite strange to have four lefties in your bullpen, but that's the case right now, and apparently Rasmussen was the one to go to from Buffalo. But it doesn't hurt, and I think sometimes that lefty-righty thing can be a little overblown. If you've got lefties that can get righties out or righties that can get lefties out, it doesn't really matter as much. To me, that comes into play when you've got a lefty that just buries left-handed hitters and they have no chance against them. Then you've got a real find there. But other than that, I think that can get blown out a little bit out of proportion.
And of course, we talked about this in Baseball Central. Aaron Sanchez is going to be up at some point. It wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't join this team by the weekend or on the weekend. I could be wrong. Have you heard anything new about that?
Nothing new other than the fact we talked about it this morning, but it's just I think he's got to get some work in. Let him get some work in there. I don't think there's any real rush. Now, if things implode a little bit up here, maybe that time speeds up a little bit. But I think for now, let him get his feet wet there. He's had a couple games already, maybe a couple more, and again, see how it goes. He has to pitch well, but I think it's different. It's different for a pitcher. And once you're so used to that routine as a starter, it's just so different because you pitch every fifth day. And not only that, but each of those days in between, you've got your routine, what you do, when you work out, when you do your running, all these different things. So I think it'll be a whole different ball of wax for Sanchez going to that bullpen. We saw Stroman do it earlier this year, and it's certainly an adjustment. And Marcus will probably be the first one to tell you that, and he had his struggles as well.
Joe, the old cliche is one game at a time. But right now for the Blue Jays, this is a pretty crucial stretch coming up here. You have Baltimore on the West Coast swing. You have the Jays, what is it, Jeff, their next 10 games against teams that are under 500.
Joe, 17.
Right. Joe, are the players looking at this as a huge opportunity, or are they just trying to keep the head down? And if they do say they're trying to keep the head down, do you actually believe them?
Yeah, I do, because you know what? The old one day at a time thing, it's such a cliche, but I think it's a well-earned cliche, because as a player, you know, you're looking at the 162. It's a long schedule. I think the biggest thing right now is that you're going through a stretch against very beatable teams, and the Orioles, who are in first place, are going through a very difficult stretch. But, boy, I tell you what, the sooner you start looking far ahead like that, the more trouble you're in. And I think, you know, John Farrell said it today, too, in his talk with the media was, we have to control what we can control. And honestly, what that is tonight's game. You don't know what the Orioles are going to do. You don't know what the Rays are going to do. You've got to tend to your own garden. I think the Blue Jays should be in that mindset as well, because if you don't worry about what you're doing yourself, you tend to let things slip away. And that's certainly, they've got enough to worry about. They've got enough on their plate alone just trying to rectify what they're doing and start playing better baseball.
And this isn't a pretty bad Boston team coming in here either. They're playing some good ball lately.
No, they've been playing well, and that's the problem. So you look in the standings, and sure, they're in last place, but I've always said it's not the team you're playing, but how they're playing. And when you look at the Red Sox right now, I think they've won 7 of 8, and they're coming off the break. They've won 4 in a row now, and they pitch. They pitch well, and anytime you're facing a team that pitches well, it's going to be a tough night at the office. It's their hitting that has been really slacking all year long, and the runs are down, but they've been swinging it a little bit too, so you know, you look at the standings, sure, you're playing a last-place team, but I really don't think they fit into that category at the current time.
Joe Siddall joins us in Primetime Sports. What do you expect to see from Drew Hutchison tonight? Do we get the good Drew or the sometimes I'm pitching at home bad Drew?
Well, I think it's just the sometimes I'm not pitching well, I'm not sharp, and I'm out of my delivery, Drew. And that's what's been happening to him. And it happens to all pitchers. But mm-hmm. I talked to Pete Walker, ironically, just today about Drew. And there's several things in a pitcher's delivery where things can go wrong. And it only takes one little thing. And it couldn't be just come in when he lifts his leg, if he doesn't have that proper balance, if his weight's going forward too quickly, or when he comes up with that leg and the glove is going back with his body. There's so many little quirks. It's that delivery. If his head maybe is direction isn't real good towards home plate, it may be going towards the first base side, and now you're spinning more like a helicopter instead of working top to bottom, working downhill. So those are just a few examples of little things that if they're just off a tick, you can miss your spot. And Drew Hutchison, just like any pitcher, has to have his fastball command. And I think that's what I really noticed in Tampa. He just wasn't sharp, not sure which particular part of his delivery was off there, but it doesn't take much, and he's been working hard in between and over the break to refine that.
Now, we all know about these injuries that the Blue Jays are dealing with, waiting for Lind, waiting for Encarnacion to come back, waiting for Brett Laurie to come back. I know everyone's trying to do their part and fill in. Just give me your take on a guy that's always controversial for fans, Mooney Kawasaki. I think he's got hits in 8 games in a row. Obviously, I don't know if he can keep this up, but what's your take on Mooney of late?
Awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. He's been very good. And I love the fact that John Gibbons moved him up in the order. He's batting in the 2-hole again tonight. He's an exciting player, and everybody knows he's a fan favorite and all. But, you know, that stuff doesn't go so well when the player's not performing.
Yeah.
But Mooney's performing now, and he's filling in admirably. And when you're missing Brett Laurie, you're looking for that extra jump, and especially defensively. But it's his plate appearances that I've been really impressed with. I think he's really looked like we talk about a, quote, professional hitter. Well, he's not afraid to take pitches. He's not afraid to work the count, work pitchers, fouling pitches off. He gives you a tough at-bat every time. And I'm not sure that that's the Kawasaki that Jays fans have seen in the past. What I'm seeing right now is kind of a pesky little hitter. He's been a pest for pitchers, and he's had a couple big knocks where he's with 2 strikes, a good 2-strike approach. He's just putting the ball on the turf and putting it in play, making things happen. So he's been very exciting.
His personality, for a guy like me, I love it. I love seeing a guy have fun at what he does. For some old school baseball types, does his personality turn them off?
No, I don't think so. I consider myself maybe half old school. I'm not that old, I guess. But no, you know what? He's pretty refreshing. He's a lot of fun. But as I said, I think the important thing here, especially if you're a teammate, or it has to be backed up. You can't have the big act if he's not performing. And I think right now you're kind of getting that total package. And quite frankly, this team needs a little bit of personality.
Yep.
You know, it
mm-hmm.
needs a little bit of a vibe. And Mooney brings that. But more so, I think, than his character and attitude and energy is that he's backing it up with his performance now.
Joe, what have you heard about Casey Jansen today? He obviously had the flu going into the weekend and did not pitch. Well, I don't know, didn't look sharp when he was called on Sunday. What's the take on Casey Jansen as far as the Blue Jays are concerned?
Didn't hear a whole lot today. There's a lot of other stuff going on, but I believe he's fine and good to go. Now, again, you come off an illness like that, I have to give him a mulligan on that performance yesterday. I think the fact that he went in there was great just to get back on the mound, really as a little test run or little dry run for when he's really going to be needed, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, whenever. But I think it was, you know, we talked about the Blue Jays adding on those runs late yesterday to give him that cushion, and turned out to be a real good thing. But I think it was a great thing because it gave Casey the chance to still come in the ball game and get some work in and really get that feel back.
Yeah, and wouldn't you rather get that night out of the way when you're up 9-5 instead of, you know, up 2-1?
It was perfect.
Yeah.
What a perfect time to tack on a couple runs for your closer who's coming off of an illness yet still wants to get on the mound. And again, it's a touch and feel. I use the word feel a lot because it is. This game is a lot of feel, whether you're talking about hitting, pitching, whatever it is. And especially, you know, you're coming off an illness trying to perform at the highest level. There's a lot of feel involved. And obviously he wasn't 100%, and I think we saw that yesterday. But yes, great that he got that work in so that hopefully he continues to build strength recovering from that illness.
Joe, it was good of you to join us. Going to let you go and rest your vocal cords ahead of your duties with Jerry Howarth and Mike Wilner tonight. And, we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thank you, gentlemen. Not a problem.
Take care.
That is Joe Siddle. I mean, I'll talk to him tomorrow because I'll be doing Baseball Central with him mm-hmm. tomorrow.
I don't know
if you're going to be doing.
Well, I know I work for the same company as Joe. Can I just say, that guy is the Roy Hobbs of broadcasting. The guy's a natural. You'd think he'd be in about his 15th year of the job, the way he sounds on the radio with Jerry.
Yeah, he and Jerry have made they've made a really nice pairing, and I guess covered almost all of Joe Siddall's at bats when he was with the Montreal Expos. Mm-hmm. And I've been telling people all I remember, about Joe Siddall. Well, I remember he was a real good defensive catcher, but I remember Felipe Alou telling me all the time, this guy's going to manage someday. This guy should manage someday. Mm-hmm. Boy, if I'm still in the game, I would have him in my staff as a coach. And, he's been a real good addition to the Sportsnet team. Mm-hmm. It seems like we've had nothing but big series for the Blue Jays, but I tell you, these 17 games, I really think this team needs to go 12-5, 13-4, and that's going to be hard because they're shorthanded, but they've got to really sort of turn the screws in the Red Sox in this series, because you do not want the Red Sox back into this.
Yeah, if you can get Boston, put them out of this, and I don't want to talk 4-game sweep, but why the hell not?
No.
So and if you
Boston
could,
goes on to Tampa after this too.
Exactly. So if you could put them out of it, but it was nice to see the long ball help last night, and that's kind of that's the way the Jays had that success back in May. If the long ball comes back, so be it. But if not, got to find a way to scrap out some runs, win greasy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do it if you have to. It was nice to see the long ball come out. That's obviously the bread and butter. They score a lot of runs based off the home run. So if it happens, it happens. But get through this stretch of games, put the hammer down, and then when you welcome Lindon Encarnacion back, if you're in a groovy spot, that'd be great to see, because, I mean, we've been saying it for, well, I don't know what, 20 years, this town sure could deserve a winner, and this, I think, is the city's best chance, is this team.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, of course, we've been talking about for the longest time that Canadian owners have been sniffing around the Buffalo Bills, and we've talked about Edward Rogers, this, of course, Rogers Communications, Larry Tannenbaum. You know, there's been talk that John Bon Jovi would be involved in a group. And John Warrow of the Associated Press had a report on the weekend that, in fact, these three individuals are, or these three groups are, keenly interested in buying the Buffalo Bills. But it appears as if this group would like to keep the team in Buffalo. Now, I'm one of these people who have never thought that the Bills were going to come to Toronto for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is I think that politically, it would be just a hard sell, and you've got some pretty significant, pretty powerful congressmen and senators from the Western New York area. I don't think there was a chance of the Bills moving to Toronto. Having said that, I admit that I'm a little surprised in some ways that a group of Canadian businessmen would want to buy a team and run it in Buffalo. Nonetheless, that appears to be the case. John Warrow of the Associated Press joins us on Primetime Sports. Hello, John.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing, Ken?
Hi, John.
Hey, good to talk to you. Should I be surprised by this, that this group, John Bon Jovi, Larry Tannenbaum, and the Rogers family, would buy the Bills and buy them to keep them in Buffalo?
What else are they going to say? Mm-hmm. At this point, I think I tweeted out over the weekend that I'll believe that they're going to keep the Bills in Western New York once they sign the next lease with either a new stadium or at Ralph Wilson Stadium. At this point, they are pretty much required to say that they're going to keep the team in Buffalo under terms of the lease agreement. They can't even hint at an intention to relocate the team. Otherwise, it opens them up to legal action from the state and the county to try to block them from even negotiating to sell the team. So to suggest that they're not going to relocate the team, well, that's advantageous to them, and really the only thing that they can say. That's not to say it won't happen, and a lot of people in Western New York, in Albany, the state capital, and in Washington are skeptical about their intentions or the source stated intentions.
John, who is this group competing against to buy this team?
I would say the biggest competition and probably the lead, the front runner would be the Sabres owners, Terry and Kim Pegula. They have been working the edges on this and have hired themselves a pretty high profile and respected investment firm to oversee their sale process, just as Rogers, Tannenbaum, and Bon Jovi have with Goldman Sachs. The Pegulas have Steve Greenberg, who's negotiated numerous sales of Allen & Company. And I would say those two are the top two prospective groups, barring somebody coming out of the woodwork by surprise.
Safe to say the Pegulas would be the choice for the average Buffalo Bills fan who lives in Western New York?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Hands down. And if the Pegulas would somehow be able to tie themselves with John Bon Jovi, because I know maybe about there were questions about the Toronto group coming together, and I know the Rogers family came in very late in this process. There was talk about John Bon Jovi chopping around to see if he can align himself with somebody else. If the Pegulas can get John Bon Jovi on board, but that's unlikely to happen, it would be a slam dunk.
John Warrow of the Associated Press joins us on Primetime Sports. As you point out, the team is essentially locked into Ralph Wilson Stadium through the 2019 season. The team would incur a $400 million penalty, even if it just broaches the prospect of moving. And you do point out there's a one-time exception that would allow the Bills to break the lease for just under $28.4 million in 2020. And one of the Correct. Things I thought of that works, I guess, that gets to your point about the team moving. If I'm buying an NFL team for $1 billion and I want to move it to a preferred location, $28.4 million, to me, that's part of the investment I would put in building the new football stadium you'd have to build to get the team in Toronto.
Right.
I mean, it's not like when you first think of it, you go, wow, that's onerous. But then when you really think about it, well, if I'm paying $1 billion for a team and I'm building a new stadium, what the hell is another $24 million or $28.4 right. million? That's peanuts.
It's more than like, I don't see the 2020 date being the possible out clause. I would foresee if somebody wants to relocate the team, relocating it after this current lease is up, after the 2022 season, only because the lease, you're free from the lease, and you can negotiate, and then you can begin essentially starting over. Because look at it this way: let's say, I don't even want to say Tannenbaum, Rogers, and John Bon Jovi, but let's say somebody in Toronto wanted to buy the team and relocate it to Toronto. They're going to have to start building a new stadium,
mm-hmm.
and to start building a new stadium would put you in conflict with the lease right away.
Sure,
because it shows your intention of wanting to relocate the team. So it's the $400 million penalty. I want to explain it. That's only in the event the county and the state lose, like a federal state judge rules in favor of relocation.
Okay.
Then the Bills would automatically have to pay $400 million. It's only at that point when the penalty is incurred.
John, what do you think? You talked about the groups in Albany and in Washington, and as I said, in New York, traditionally, there's a pretty powerful political base there on the national level, and Western New York on the state level as well. And I mean, Buffalo, and I can see in some ways the Bills in Buffalo becoming almost a motherhood issue for people in that state and some of their representatives in Washington. I've always felt that ultimately that's the hurdle here. Am I guilty of being a little too naive?
Well, that's a big factor, but eventually money talks.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL has to be very careful on this because Chuck Schumer, the senior senator for New York, is essentially the fifth most powerful person in Washington, D.C. The threat of the, it escapes me, the antitrust law
right.
or antitrust hearings coming in. He could invoke those just as a threat, and that would scare off Roger Goodell, who happens to be from Western New York. Andrew Cuomo is touted to be a potential presidential candidate down the road. You wouldn't want to incur his wrath in some ways. And he does not want to, neither Schumer nor Cuomo want to lose the Bills on their watch.
You said money talks, John. Where would the NFL ultimately make more money, do you believe, down the road? In Toronto or in Buffalo? What would be their best interest?
It's a tough call, but I believe some owners are enamored with Toronto and being in a large market like that. That said, the Bills made just about $30 million last year, and if with the TV revenue coming in, they're projected to make double that by 2019. I think sentimentality plays a factor, too, because it's the Bills, and despite their losing record of, last 14 years, they do have a place in the NFL landscape and are known across the league. But don't discount people wanting to make marketing deals with people in Canada, businesses in Canada, and expand that market, because the NFL has a stated commitment to expand globally.
John, let me ask you this, maybe a little off the wall here, but is there any thought given that as part of the negotiations, this Canadian group, we'll call them the Canadian group with John Bon Jovi, is there any thought that a rider may be put in sort of demanding or requiring that they somehow get involved in construction of a new stadium in Buffalo? We keep hearing about the waterfront project and a couple other things like that. I don't know if there's any legal case to be made for that, but would that not go a ways towards, pretty much addressing all the issues about the danger of the team moving?
I don't see that as being part of the sale process. I mean, the NFL might invoke that, but I don't even see the NFL doing that, because once you buy a team, you can do with the team what you want under the rules of the league and all that stuff. I do know that the state and the county would step in immediately and try and approach the next prospective owner to try to determine what the future is as far as Ralph Wilson Stadium or a new stadium. And I know that's already been discussed, with the Pegulas and Tom Golisano, the former Sabres owner. I know they've already had meetings with certain officials in regards to what the future might hold as far as the stadium goes, because the state has hired an attorney and an architectural firm that is going to release a report probably in about early August on potential sites and also on another renovation at Ralph Wilson Stadium.
John, when's this whole story going to end? What's the end date for this?
I wish it was right now.
That's why I love you, John Warren. I love that. You're such a hard-bitten journalist. I wish it was right now.
It looks like, the next step is for more forms to be submitted by July 29th, which is next Tuesday, I want to say. At that point, Stanley Morgan, the banking firm that's representing Ralph Wilson's estate, will somewhat vet the process and establish and set up meetings with prospective ownership groups to actually Stanley Morgan will make a formal presentation to each ownership group on the financials, the background, answer any questions they might have. Long story short, we could have an ownership group identified as early as the end of August, more than likely September, and the hope is, and this is just not my hope because I'm a hard-bitten journalist and want to get on with my life, is that it might go to the NFL. There's an NFL ownership meeting in early October, and it might in Detroit, as it just so happens, and it might be brought up as early as then. And I know the Ralph Wilson's estate would like to get this sale done sooner than later as well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John, before we let you scoot, Marcel Darius failed a conditioning test at Bill's training camp.
Football question.
Honestly, I mean, I don't have to ask it if you want, but I figured you'd appreciate one. He's on the active non-football injury list on Saturday.
Right.
How surprised were the Bills of this? I mean, with all due respect, the Bills, when I've got a guy who, has been involved in a couple of instances, has a couple of arrests for reckless driving and even drug possession. I'm not saying that you can't be a healthy guy and in shape when you do that, but this would suggest to me that this guy, in the very least, has a difficult time focusing and staying in shape.
Marcel Darius is a good guy at heart, who seems to be, I don't want to say spiraling out of control, but is in a downward spiral with a lot of personal issues that have come up. He's had a lot of pain and death in his family in his past, and things seem to be really catching up to him as far as this stuff. And I'm concerned about him. I don't think he's a bad guy, but if the wake-up call hasn't come by now, I'm not sure when it will come. And General Manager Doug Whaley even has expressed concern in regards to Marcel's future, though he maintains confidence that he can turn things around. It's a tough story. I know it's difficult to separate the money he makes and the prestige, you know, he has from the human side from it, but I can see the human side from it, and I feel bad for him. And I know a lot of people, including teammates, are hoping he can turn things around, but this is a tough story.
John, it was good of you to join us today, as always.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, John.
Take care. That is John Warrow of the Associated Press.
See, that was
like the hardest working man in Buffalo.
Oh, man. That's the one question I wanted to get in is, when does this end? Because it just keeps going and going and going. And congrats on making it through the whole interview without making a Bon Jovi musical pun or reference.
Well, we're halfway there.
Boom! Nice.
Living on a prayer.
That was some bad medicine.
That was some bad medicine indeed. There you go. John Warrow of the Associated Press in Buffalo. That is a great job. I mean, he's all over the Sabres. He's all over the Bills. You know what? John and I we understand each other because I spent like 9.5 years covering the death of the Expos.
Yeah, I was gonna
and are
say,
they going to move or not going to move? And we always, anytime I run into John, I see John at a hockey game. He goes, "Jeff, isn't it good to be at a sports event covering sports?"
You guys must just want to hug each other when you see each other. It's a very emotional embrace.
It is, and we appreciate John Warrow joining us. We've got, we don't call them primetime bullets anymore. We call them primetime wizards. We've got a few extraneous, miscellaneous things we want to get off our chest, and we'll do that when primetime sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports for Monday, July 21st. I said to talk slow because we've got nothing to talk about. They have no faith in me. It's Jeff Blair and Ken Reed. The producers of the show have no faith in my ability to kill time. Clearly, they've never heard the Jeff Blair show from
You host 19 hours of radio a day, so you can kill time. What are we going to talk about here?
We didn't even talk about golf. Like, can you tell that McCowan's not in because the Monday after the Open, we're not talking about it?
How can one man coast and dominate the Open Championship that much? Because, Rory won by 2 strokes.
Who's Rory?
Rory McIlroy. Okay. But he really won by, he was in a 100-meter race, and he sprinted out, and for the first 80 meters, he looked back, and no one was even at the 50. And then he just kind of strolled across the finish line yesterday.
No Tiger, no Jeffy when it comes to golf. Sorry.
I think you're going to have to learn about some other players.
You know what? It's funny because, Ken, you mentioned that, and one of the, I guess, the subtexts, the subplots from this whole tournament, and a lot of people are writing about it, is this may be the tournament that kind of ends the whole Tiger. Mm-hmm.
The fascination. I'm not saying Tiger won't win another major,
fascination, but people have been, the crux of the matter is people have been waiting for somebody else to come along who's more interesting than Tiger Woods.
Yep.
And they've got, you know, they're a bunch of fine individuals and good golfers, but I think Rory McIlroy has that thing that might attract people.
He can dominate. And I think people love to see a guy dominate because Tiger could dominate. Yeah, I mean, Rory's got a, he's a cool story. His dad's obviously a character, plays some bets on his son 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah,
and he dominated the Open Championship, and no one is supposed to dominate the Open Championship. For that matter, the guy who's in second place isn't supposed to shoot, the two guys are in second place, Fowler and Garcia, they're not supposed to shoot 15 under either. You're supposed to win the Open Championship at what, one or two under, but course was playing awfully soft. Conditions were very, very favorable as far as the British Open goes, so...
That was the problem. I flicked over a little bit this year, and I'm saying there's no wind, there's no rain. It's just another golf tournament.
Yeah, Bob was sitting here freaking out last Thursday going, I want storms. I want rain.
Oh, totally. Now, look, people who know me know that I wouldn't walk across my bedroom to watch a PGA event, to be honest. But I'll watch the British Open. I'll watch the, what do they call it? They call it the
Open Championship.
The Open, yeah. Well, yes. I'm going to call it the British Open.
I don't think you can say British anymore.
Okay. I'll watch the Open Championships if it's, you know, the Hobbs of Hell are out there, it's windy and it's cold.
Yeah. I don't know how that sounded on radio, but that was my sound effect for wind in a player's face.
You know, Tom Watson in a sweater, that's what I want for my golf.
I remember as a kid watching. And
I used to watch it all the time because I golfed when I was younger.
Yeah. Why are those guys wearing sweaters and it's the middle of July? I like golfing when it's hot or nice out. I don't like to golf in late October or late April when it's cold. I want to wear the shorts. Let the sun's out, guns out, you know. Roll the sleeves up.
Sun's out, guns out?
Sun's out, guns out. Show off the pipes. I'm impressed that Rory has the same type of golf shirts that we have here at Sportsnet, if I just like to cross-promote there just a little bit, because I kind of feel cool wearing this golf shirt now.
I didn't get the blue and gray ones.
Well, you do now. Well, they're down in the clothing room. Talk to Deb. She can hook you up.
I just got the black and silver ones. Anyhow. Be able to do it. So we talked a little bit about this start of the show, throughout the show, indeed. Big Jays series against the Boston Red Sox tonight, which we will have in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Starting tonight in Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet, first of four games, including a Thursday afternoon game that'll see Marcus Stroman take the mound.
How about Stroman the other night?
It's interesting. You and Joe Siddle in our discussion at 6 o'clock, we were talking about Munenori Kawasaki, or you actually brought up Munenori Kawasaki because Joe Siddle knows I would never bring up Munenori Kawasaki.
And I only wanted to bring it up because I know Zani had some stuff to say about Munenori Kawasaki today.
Right, and I'm one of those people, I never did get the whole Munenori Kawasaki thing because I like my players to be good, not funny.
He's been good lately.
I've come around. You know what? Maybe it's seeing some of the doughhead, ham-handed baseball that I've seen from this team in the past couple of weeks. I've come around a little bit of Munenori Kawasaki, but you guys touched on something. And I know Joe and I have talked about this as well. If you talk to John Gibbons, he will tell you that there are times, and this is his word, there are times where his team is dead ass.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I have noticed the most in the absence of Brett Laurie, and then, you know, you can have a debate about Brett Laurie's baseball abilities, whether or not he's ever going to be the player we think he should be. You guys anybody can have that debate. When this team does not have Brett Laurie in the lineup, it can be painfully dull to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons I really liked what I saw from Marcus Stroman this weekend, is I saw a guy out in the mound who really wanted to dominate, And you know, you talk about Munenori Kawasaki and why he's so popular in Toronto. I think that's the reason with this team. It's even when this team was winning, it's a dynamic team. But you know, John Gibbons said we're still kind of, you know, got a lot of Colby Rasmuses. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, you have to stick a mirror under Colby Rasmus' nose to determine if he's breathing or not.
Right,
half the time.
You want a little snap in your players. You want a little pizzazz on the field. That, if I'm not mistaken, and I bring this up from time to time, sports, weren't they invented as a form of recreation?
Mm-hmm.
And most forms of recreation to have fun. So what's wrong with a little fun on the diamond? What's wrong with a little fun on the ice? And to me, I hate this whole put your head down and run around the bases after you get a home run, or, you know, don't pump your fist when you get a goal. Celebrate. Have fun. Oh. That's why I love the World Baseball Classic. Favorite team to watch, Dominican Republic. They're having a blast.
They were, I mean, it was like a party. There was a great incident Sunday. Really an incident. But Fernando Rodney, who pitches for the Seattle Mariners.
Love the way he wears his hat, by the way.
Wears his hat off the side, but he's got this thing whenever a game's over where he does the arrow, right?
Yeah, kind of the Hulk Hogan, but on an angle.
Exactly. So Mike Trout and Albert Pujols, and usually Fernando Rodney does this at the end of the game. For some reason, I can't figure out, he decides he's going to do it in the eighth inning. So, of course, the Angels come up. What happens? Pujols and Trout get hits, and they both do the same thing.
Absolutely.
They do the bow and arrow thing.
If you're going to give it, take it.
And you know what? It was great because everybody responded the way you'd want them to. And we're showing it in TV right now. Everybody responded the way you'd want them to. You know, the players, did it and looked out at Rodney. Rodney said afterwards, hey, you know what? I've got a lot of friends in baseball. He didn't have any problem with
good.
It. I thought it was tremendous. And you do need to see more of that. And that gets back to Munenori Kawasaki is people need to be entertained a little bit. And, you know, as good as this Blue Jays team has been, when it loses, it quite often plays really lousy baseball.
Really dumb baseball sometimes. But, yeah, win with a little flair. Have a little fun. I mean, I could bring up wrestling if I wanted to. Wrestling's not a real sport.
Yes, it is.
Okay,
it's more a real sport than UFC.
Okay, but they got on to the
boy,
fact.
Boy, are we ever going to get killed
for
that.
You are. They got on to the fact that we can give people a show. We can give them and we can make it entertaining.
Yeah.
So when you go to the ballpark, there's a reason they have the Jumbotron going and the music going, because they want to entertain you. And if that's what sucks in some of the fans, because the diehard's always going to be there. So make it fun. And as players, everybody loves to smile. And if you got a guy on your team who's successful and can make you a little happy and can improve the vibe, by all means, there's some things you just can't measure in stats, and maybe the Kawasaki effect is that. It definitely was last year. Not saying it's going to work every time, but smile when you play. I love that Angels Mariners stuff. That's fantastic.
Anything else you want to get off your chest?
You and John talked about your common thread of John covering the Bills possibly leaving, and your
yes.
common thread of the Expos possibly leaving. I wanted to know,
Tom Death March.
You can name him if you'd want to. What Montreal Expo wanted the Expos to leave town most, or was there one guy that just said, I want to get this team out of here?
In the last year?
Let's say the last 4 or 5 years.
Not really.
Yeah?
No, the owner.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Loria.
Yeah.
The only player I covered who really seemed to really not like playing in Montreal was Mark Langston when the
Expos acquired him. Trade.
He was the only guy that I just thought, he just doesn't like it here. His family just doesn't like it here. And you always got the sense that he was just passing through. But other than that, most of the players, I mean, I'll tell you, I remember the last game ever at Olympic Stadium, Brad Wilkerson, who's a kid who grew up in West Virginia. I mean, Brad Wilkerson broke down in the field.
Yeah.
It's funny. If you were a single guy,
yeah,
you're never in a hurry to leave Montreal.
Oh, no.
Never in a hurry to leave Montreal. And I can't think of anybody who was, who was glad to get out of there. You know, and I mean, guys like Cliff Floyd, Rondell White, Pedro Martinez, they still go back to Montreal.
Yeah.
On a fairly frequent basis.
Seems like it was the kind of city where if you embraced it, you seem to have success, and it became a mutual attraction between the city and the player.
Yeah, there's a lot of attractive things in Montreal.
There you go.
I mean, there are a lot of things about Montreal that are attractive.
Blended on that.
How I should put it. That was not a sexist comment, by the way. I know there are those of you out there thinking.
Good-looking dudes in Montreal. Good-looking guys and girls
absolutely.
In Montreal.
It's a fine city. That's it for Primetime Sports today. I'll be back tomorrow. You're not going to be here, right?
And no, I have to go to a baseball game with Ivanka, Tim, and Sid.
There you go. Primetime Sports will return tomorrow. Take care, everybody.